Despite the great difficulty of acquiring computers in 1980s Czechoslovakia, amateur enthusiasts still managed to do so, and produced hundreds of computer games, some of which were politically subversive. They frequently did this on jerry-built computer systems, while homemade arcade games were also to be found. This scene is the focus of the book Gaming the Iron Curtain by academic Jaroslav Švelk. When we spoke, Švelk told me about his own first experiences with computer games back in the 1980s.
I was a bit lucky. I was one of the early adopters of computer games in Czechoslovakia back then because my dad was a programmer at the Solo Sušice factory, which was a factory that produced matches and other kind of, you know, things made out of wood. So he was working there as a programmer, and I would go there every now and then to play games on the computers that they had there. And some of them were East German computers, and then later they also got some IBM PC computers. So that was sort of my first contact there.
In Czechoslovakia in the 80s, would many people have had microcomputers at home? And if they did, how did they acquire them?
Yeah, it was not easy. There were some people who had microcomputers, but it was about 10 times fewer than in the UK, for example. But there was still a sizable community, and most of those people either imported the computers from the West individually, so they could go to the West, or their friends or relatives could go to the West, buy a computer there, and then usually, or often smuggle it through the customs, or they bought it on the black market, or they could buy it in Tuzex, which was a specialized kind of store with imported goods. But the demand was much bigger than supply, and there were a lot of people who wanted computers, but they couldn't get them.
And what were the most common brands people would have had at home?
The most common in Czechoslovakia was actually a British computer, the Sinclair ZX Spectrum. And there were some reasons for it. One was that it was the cheapest microcomputer available on the Western markets in the early 80s, up to the mid-80s. And also, it was one of the smallest ones, which kind of made it easier to smuggle through the customs. There are these stories of people buying chocolate boxes and eating all the chocolates and putting the Spectrum into the chocolate box and then kind of smuggling it through the customs. And then, like, once there was a big enough community of people who had the Sinclair ZX Spectrum computers, then others kind of snowballed because there was already a community that kind of knew how this computer worked and could support the new members. So in a way, it was like this snowball effect.
And you say in your book that after these computers became obsolete in the UK, they were still being used here.
Yeah, that is true. Because still the buying power here in Czechoslovakia was much lower, so people couldn't transition to more powerful machines that easily. And there is another reason for that, and that is the Czechoslovak clones, especially Didaktik, which was a factory that produced computers in Skalica, in today's Slovakia, and they were basically producing clones of the Sinclair ZX Spectrum machine up until the mid-90s, so much later than these types of computers were produced in the West.
And if we can speak about games, where would people have acquired games? Were they Czechoslovak-made in general? Were they imported? Were they copies?
Most of the games that people played at that time were pirated copies of Western games. And they often made it into Czechoslovakia through Poland or through Yugoslavia and Hungary, which were slightly more liberal, so it was easier for people to travel to the West and buy the games there. And then, you know, from person to person, they were copied from tape to tape and made their way to Czechoslovakia. But there were also domestically produced games. There was no industry to speak of, but there were a lot of amateurs who were making games in their spare time. And about 300 to 400 games have been preserved from that era, which is a pretty high number, given that there was no industry. It was all just amateur efforts.
In your book, you also make reference to the Czech golden hands, the famous golden hands, Zlaté ručičky, which I guess means a kind of knack for creative DIY. How did the golden hands make themselves felt in the world of computer games?
Well, there were all kinds of DIY projects happening, both in hardware and software. So in hardware, for example, people were making their own joystick controllers with wooden furniture knobs, and they would cannibalize calculators and take buttons out of calculators and make them into buttons for the joysticks. And they would build all these things from scratch. They would build mice, computer mice from scratch. and all kinds of hardware. So one reason for that was that these peripherals, this hardware was not readily available. You couldn't go and buy it in a store. At the same time, at some point, it started to be like a competitive scene. So people would just compete with each other, trying to show off what they can make.
Your book is entitled "Gaming the Iron Curtain." In what sense were these people on this scene gaming the communist system, or gaming the restrictions of late communism?
In many ways. One of them was just being very resourceful in trying to get the computers from the West and on the black markets by these DIY projects that kind of sidestep the lack of availability of the hardware on the market. But also, games at that point were a very new medium, and the authorities didn't really realize that it was a medium, I think. So there was no real kind of censorship of games. The authorities weren't really checking games as kind of actively as they were rock music, for instance. So games, to some people, offered this kind of creative outlet where they could express themselves. And also there were some games that were sort of actively kind of protesting the communist regime.
Well, this is hugely interesting. How are they doing that?
There was a series of games made in the late 80s that were either making fun of the communist ideology and the regime, or that were kind of actively criticizing some steps of the government. So some of these games were kind of funny, kind of cheeky text adventure games, such as one that featured Major Shatokhin of the Soviet Red Army and John Rambo, and the Soviet soldier, the Soviet hero, had to kill John Rambo. But in the process, I mean, there were many kind of opportunities to fail, so that the Soviet hero actually went through like a lot of kind of mishaps and kind of very humiliating death scenes. So in that way, it was a pretty subversive game. And then, like a bit later, there were even games that were tied to particular protests against the regime. So, for instance, the Palach Week in early 1989, which was a peaceful demonstration that was brutally suppressed by the police, and there was a game made about it, a text adventure game starring Indiana Jones, who was a popular kind of character in computer games at that time. And in this game, Indiana Jones has to kind of fight his way through the Wenceslas Square and kind of escape to the airport. But in the process, like, he has to basically kill the members of the communist police and the people's militia and so on. So once again, it's a quite a subversive game, a bit violent, but I think it's allowed the players to kind of relive this traumatic experience from the point of view of like an empowered superhero.
And do you know if anybody ever got in trouble for those kind of games or simply for piracy?
We don't have any evidence of that. The secret police records don't really show any systematic surveillance of computer clubs or kind of microcomputer hobbyists. So it seems that there was really no kind of repercussions for that. Also, most of these kind of activist games, political games, were released anonymously. So there was no kind of names that could, no signatures that could kind of connect the game to the author. And in many cases, we still don't know who made those games. In some cases, it kind of surfaced like later in the 90s. But people were kind of wary of the some potential repercussions, but it seems that there were really none.
There's a fantastic image in your book of a whole series of cassette tape inlay cards with the names of games like Tetris and dozens of others. Tell us about the role of cassette tapes in the computer game scene here.
Back then, cassette tapes were the primary data storage medium. In the West, they were kind of slowly being phased out in the late 80s, but here, just because of the lower buying power and just like kind of general kind of relative backwardness, they remained in heavy use until the early 90s. Especially among kind of young hobbies, young people and teenagers and so on, who couldn't afford like a better computer or a disk drive. So most software in the 80s was circulating on cassette tapes. And that had some advantages, because cassette tapes could actually be kind of bought easily. Not easily, but they were more available than floppy disks, for instance. Much more readily available. So they could buy cassette tapes and then record games on those. But if you would play them in a tape deck, it would just be noise, but the computers kind of converted the analog signal into a digital signal.
Also, and this surprised me a great deal, there were kind of arcade games here also that were kind of jerry-built, homemade.
Yeah, they were, and many of them were kind of built from boards, from like the CPUs, like the hardware that actually was running the game, was very often kind of smuggled from Germany or from some other country. And what happened is that sometimes people would build the cabinets here by themselves, because it was much easier to import or smuggle the board than the whole cabinet. They would build homemade cabinets with homemade controllers and everything. And I interviewed one of these people who were making these cabinets, Tomáš Smutný, who was just recently inducted into the Czech Games Hall of Fame, actually. And he said that they were also using color TVs that were smuggled into the country through Soviet soldiers who were stationed in the country. They were Russian TVs, the Soviet TVs. So there was like a whole kind of shadowy operation behind these arcade games. And then these cabinets would travel around the country in these kind of mobile buses.
Like to fun fairs.
Yeah, to fun fairs, yeah. They were kind of crammed in these, these mobile arcades that were converted usually from buses or trucks, and young people would go there and spend their coins there.
As for the games that were produced here in the 80s, have you played many of them, and how do they stand up today?
I've played all the games that I mentioned in the book. If they are games that have some kind of story that has a beginning and an end, I play them from beginning to the end. It's kind of hard to judge. I think even with Western games from the 80s, like, many of them don't stand up because they were designed in a way that was, they were difficult and they were not really as well playable as games are today. Czechoslovak games were also amateur efforts, so they were very often kind of simpler. The graphics probably weren't as good. I think they stand up as historical artifacts. Like, they're immensely interesting if you want to learn something about the history or the life of, ordinary computer hobbyists in the 1980s.
And have you acquired a lot of the hardware from that time or any other kind of memorabilia?
I have people that I interview sometimes, lend me their hardware, and I usually take pictures, but most of the time I then return it to them because I don't have space. And I actually think that I don't have a backing of like a memory institution, like a museum. And I think it's a big shame that there is currently kind of no museum in the Czech Republic that would collect these artifacts. There are some private collectors who have really good collections, and sometimes there are exhibitions in different places of these, of hardware usually. But I definitely think that an institution should start doing this.